Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We are closing in on the NFL draft, and we will all be thrilled when Washington is on the clock sometime after 8 o'clock on Thursday evening. You can listen to every single pick that Washington and every other NFL team makes right here on the Team 980 draft coverage Thursday night, Friday night, and all day Saturday for rounds 4 through 7. So tune in to the Team 980 for draft coverage. I'll be on the coverage Friday night with Denton, where as of now, Washington has 5 selections in the second and third round. Jumping on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is Nikki Javala. Nikki, of course, does a great job and has for several years now covering the team for The Washington Post. Follow Nikki on X, on Twitter, at Nikki Javala. So I we'll get to the quarterbacks and your thoughts here in a moment, but I just want to go back to last week and get your thoughts on, you know, the noise from various corners about Washington's top 30 visit format. What did you make of it? Was it, you know, was it significant in any way or fairly benign?
I thought it was asinine. Is that a little too blunt for you?
No, I like when you're blunt.
I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. Like, seriously, we're talking about top 30 visits and, you know, a 20-something guy's going to Topgolf. This is what we're debating. You know, like, I feel like the top 30 visits got too much weight or value in these debates. Like, yes, they're important, maybe more or less, depending on the team. But that's not the end-all be-all. I don't think a draft pick is a bust or a success based on these top 30 visits. And it's not like the traditional way of doing them has, you know, always led to success. So what are we really debating here? You know?
Right, Will. That's such a great point. And Ben and I were talking about that yesterday. It's like, so if you got upset because you thought they were doing it incorrectly, or you were super excited by this edgy, unique way of doing it, there's nothing so far that is proven when it comes to draft evaluation. A good draft hits on like 35% to 40% of the players selected.
Right, right. And this is, like, it's not even super edgy. I mean, like, a lot of teams have a group of players. I think the difference here was you brought in 4 of the top quarterbacks, and that's a little different. But really the only thing they did together was go to Topgolf. And, you know, here's the other thing is I feel like the notion of what a top 30 is or should be differs depending on who you ask. Like, some view it as like this honorary thing where if you get a top 30, like, you know, you're one of their candidates, where I don't think that could be wrong, but from every team I've talked to, it's more information gathering. This is not an honorary thing. Nobody has made the team, so they shouldn't be rolling out the red carpet for anybody. I think once a player does make the team, a quarterback in particular, should be treated differently than others, just because of the magnitude and the importance of their position. But at this stage, they're like all the others, you know, they're all vying for, you know, a roster spot, a place on any team. So I thought that was totally blown out of proportion. And then, you know, the ensuing debate over, you know, what an emoji means from an agent when an agent's opinion has no bearing on a draft pick right now. But otherwise, I thought it was a totally sound discussion.
Actually, let me just point out one thing that I thought was intriguing, that Penix Jr. was there. You know, the four quarterbacks being there at the same time, you know, obviously there was some sort of intent to have at least some of them there. But I just thought, well, why would Michael Penix Jr. be there on that final day when he's not possibly a pick at number two, which of course leads, you know, to the idea that maybe they think they're going to get a really good offer, or perhaps are considering offers from teams wanting to move up. What do you think?
Or maybe they want everybody to think that, and it's sort of a smokescreen in a lot of ways. But yeah, I agree with you totally. And I think, again, that's what these top 30s are for, is it's all information gathering. You have to do your due diligence to account for every possible scenario. And they very well could get a strong offer. I would be very surprised at this point if they did move back from number two, but it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility.
All right, well, let's just talk about the asinine for one more minute here. Because you did mention, you know, the, you know, trying to decipher what a couple of liked tweets meant. But I think you can fairly, you know, come to the conclusion that the agent for Jaden Daniels was at the very least caught off guard by what happened and wasn't thrilled with it. Is there any kind of impact from that?
If it were free agency, absolutely. But the draft, yeah. I think, you know, if you know, one party goes into this, again, viewing a top 30 as an honorary type of visit instead of an information gathering session, then, you know, there could be, you know, hard feelings going in if they do draft them. But it's the draft. I mean, the prospects don't have a say on where they go. I mean, the days of anybody pulling an Eli, nobody's done it since. So, I mean, if he gets picked by Washington, he gets to Washington. So what does it matter what, you know, whether he's upset about the top 30 visit right now? I mean, that's the part that's kind of silly. If this were free agency, totally different ballgame. Then they, you know, then it would really matter. We'd have to really, really dissect his agent's thinking face emoji.
Look, I'm with you on this, but the counter to that would be it's not about the fact that he can't control where he wants to go. It's whether or not the opinion of the team that does have the control over where he goes cares about what his agent liked in the form of two tweets criticizing the team's process.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they feel about it. I also don't think that much matters either. You know, this is how the draft works. You can't really control where you go. And both sides know that. So, you know, I mean, if you're really upset over, you know, a top 30 visit, but the team ends up, you know, giving him a solid $20 million rookie deal and he plays well and gets a second contract, are you really going to hold grudges?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, these are 23, 24-year-old young people who it's only natural that they actually have a preference, and I'm not even suggesting that he does, but it's only natural that anybody would have a preference,
right.
But it doesn't mean that a year from now they're not going to be like, oh, my God, I'm so glad that this team picked me. I love Washington. I love the coaching staff. And things change. I mean, anyway. So when we talked a couple of weeks ago, you know, you're not the only one. Everybody has sort of acknowledged just how buttoned up the organization is compared to previous regimes.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, as we're now, you know, 56 hours or whatever and counting until they're going to be on the clock, does the reporter in you have a strong hunch at this point, or are you still kind of in the dark as it relates to what they're going to do because they haven't said anything?
I hate admitting this, but I don't know. And I think anybody who tells you they do is lying. Even at this stage, they have done a remarkably good job of keeping it really close to the vest. You know, and I think there's a possibility that that continued with the way they structured the top 30 business, you know, bring them all in so nobody thinks that, you know, we're favoring one or the other. Why they feel the need to do that, I don't know, but that's sort of the approach they've taken to this. So I don't know. It's been frustrating as heck.
You don't know, but do you have, I mean, you know, the reporter in you is one thing, but you also opine occasionally, especially in this format. Do you have a hunch?
It depends on the day and the hour. For much of the pre-draft process, it's been Jane Daniels. There have been moments where I've wavered. I'm like, well, maybe it could be Drake May. Yes, it's definitely Drake May. Or wait, what about J.J. McCarthy? I'd say the majority of the time I felt like it's been Jane Daniels, but I truly don't know. And like, I'm not, you know, I'm not one to claim I do know something when I don't. That's all I got, really.
We are talking to Nikki Javala from the Washington Post. What do you think we're going to learn? And maybe the answer is we're not sure, because I don't have an answer to this one either, and I'm okay admitting it. But in terms of like Adam Peters in San Francisco and being a part of that group, do you think they'll be risk takers or more conservative in their approach with the draft?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think every, and I hate saying this because it sounds so cliche, but I do think every draft is different in themselves. Like this year, they have the resources to be more aggressive. In past years in Washington, they were ultra conservative to the point where I'm like, I don't know why you're this conservative, but they also didn't have, you know, this many resources. And I'm talking about, you know, picks, cap space, the whole nine. Looking at, you know, what he did in San Francisco, they were incredibly aggressive during the draft. I could totally see them being the same. But I also think he's the type that draws from his time in New England and Denver as well. You see him doing a lot of the same things he's picked up at different stops. And it's not just him now. I mean, there's also, you have Lance Newmark, who's a top decision maker, is Josh Harris. So, you know, I think, you know, they'll probably all draw from, you know, previous drafts, Josh Harris being, you know, his NBA draft days, which are different, but, you know, somewhat similar, but yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I still think there's a very good chance they could move back into the first round to have two picks in the first round, but do I know that for sure? No, it's just totally a hunch.
Yeah, and it's based on them having so much, you know, draft capital in the in the top three rounds and having so many significant needs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I wonder, I think free agency was a clue to this, but I want to hear your answer, which is to the question, do you think there's any pressure on Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, from, let's just say, Josh Harrison ownership, to be competitive quickly, to win quickly, sooner rather than later?
I think there's pressure, no doubt. I don't get the sense that they're willing to make any brash decision by getting there sooner versus, you know, finding the guys that they fully believe they can develop and get to a higher point, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't think they'll make any, like, crazy decision just to, you know, win this year versus next year. I think they are ultimately looking at 2-3 years down the road, which, as you hinted, was a clue that free agency provided. I mean, he said from the start, and I know a lot of coaches and GMs say this, we want to build through the draft. Well, only a handful actually do that. this team set it up so they could build through the draft. A lot of these veterans were signed to 1 or 2 year deals. So they're there to kind of set the tone, you know, establish an identity, you know, get these young guys going so they can pass it along. And then you build a core that way. So I like what they did in free agency. I thought it was very smart. It seemed methodical. In years past, it didn't always feel like that in Washington. But yeah, it was clearly geared towards building through the draft.
Nikki, have you learned anything in terms of like how this is working? You know, is it truly collaborative? Is it truly these aligned visions coming together with Adam Peters having the final call? Or is it working in a way that Adam Peters is driving the whole thing? Like, do you have any sense of how they're working together for the first time, by the way, on a draft?
Yeah. I mean, it does sound like there are a lot of voices in there, but I do believe that Adam Peters has, you know, the full control that a GM would have. Like, these are his decisions. Josh Harris is in there, but from the people I've talked to, he's mostly observing. I know Florio had that report that he's been more involved than people expected. Well, he always said he was going to be involved, so, and that was just based off one person, it sounded like. You know, he said, you know, last year that he planned to, you know, be in the draft room. Sorry.
Congratulations.
And do a radio. Thank you. Trying to do two things at once here. But he said he was going to be in the draft room. He said he wanted to observe and understand the process in the NFL more. So this shouldn't be a shock to anybody that he is in there, as just as he was in, you know, combine meetings. And this is a massive investment for any NFL franchise, so you would expect the owner to be there, in my opinion. But to your question, I do think Adam Peters does have the full authority to, you know, kind of lead this group. I do believe that he is leaning on Lance Newmark quite a bit. So there is some collaboration. There's still Bob Myers, he's involved. Martin Mayhew's still involved. There are a number of voices, but I do think this is Adam's kind of running things.
With Lance Newmark as kind of his right hand. Is that kind of mm-hmm. what you just implied?
Yeah.
Okay. Talking to Nikki Javalin, I'll get you off here quickly, get you out of here quickly. So, you know, we've probably talked about this, but I mean, the incredible timing of a new regime change, new GM, new owner, new GM, new coach, and this incredible sort of stash of draft picks, including number two overall. It doesn't always work that way. I mean, typically when you have a new regime, it's a bad team with a high pick, but sometimes that pick is gone for whatever reason. Like, I think that this is one of the most important drafts in franchise history. What do you think?
Undoubtedly so. I mean, this is after, you know, more than two decades of disappointment, losing, you know, scandal. You know, the franchise has a real opportunity to get back on track to where they were in the late 90s and like this, I mean, the late 80s. So this is, to me, this is huge. This is by far the most important draft. And to really have a great shot at getting a quarterback, not just for now, but for the future. So, yeah, I mean, no pressure, Adam Peters.
Yeah, exactly. All right, look, I'll let you run. Congrats, by the way. Did the hours that you are keeping, have they changed? Were you up watching your Nuggets last night?
I was. Absolutely. Yeah. So his hours have changed. Mine haven't. So I just sleep less and less every day. Yeah. So I still go to bed late and just wake up super early. So
we'll get used to that. You'll be watching a lot of NBA late night games. That game was phenomenal last night.
It was awesome.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it.
Of course. Sorry for all the baby sounds.
No, it's fine. Totally understand. Nikki Javalin, everybody, from the Washington Post. Sam Monson's going to join us at 11:35. There was a report, an actual report, on who Washington will take at number two, not just speculation or strong, opinion. We had a report yesterday. You'll hear it next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus will join us in about 12 minutes. In the 12 o'clock hour, I'm going to play back for you a guest that we had on, I don't know, Denton, a month ago, J.J. McCarthy's long time since he was in seventh grade quarterback coach. He said some things that day that sort of stuck, and I want to play some of that back, and I'll explain the reason during the 12 o'clock hour. But this was Chris Sims from his podcast yesterday called Unbuttoned. I believe it's called Chris Sims Unbuttoned. And he was talking about Washington at two. Here's what he said.
Saying this, because it feels like if they didn't do Jaden Daniels, they would do Drake May, right? That's what it feels like.
And again, I agree.
I have no inside info. But as I was talking about this on the show today at PFT, we were talking about the Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Washington conundrum, right? I had somebody that I really trust connected to the situation who texted me and said, it will not be Drake May at two. Okay. So that was like the first time I had heard anything stone cold from somebody I trust about Washington and the quarterback situation. All right. And that was the text I get.
So that was Chris Sims. That I think qualifies as a report. He's not a reporter. He's a talk show host. Gets a text from somebody saying it's not going to be Drake May. Play it one more time for me. I just want to hear if he actually says the line sources say, which Ben, I think, said to us yesterday. You need to hear or read for it to sort of register legitimately as a report. Go ahead.
Saying this, because it feels like if they didn't do Jaden Daniels, they would do Drake May, right? That's what it feels like.
And again, I agree.
I have no inside info. But as I was talking about this on the show today at PFT, we were talking about the Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Washington conundrum, right? I had somebody that I really trust connected to the situation who texted me and said, it will not be Drake May at two. Okay. So that was like the first time I had heard anything stone cold from somebody I trust about Washington and the quarterback situation. All right. And that was the text I get.
Did he say from Washington there at the end? Because somebody close to the situation could be, you know, agents, which they typically are. That was Chris Sims saying that it won't be Drake May. And if it's not Drake May, then it'll be Daniels or J.J. McCarthy, or I guess a potential trade back. I don't know anything about – we had John Keim on the other day, and Keim suggested that in the event it's not Daniels at two, which he believes that's his best guess right now, he thinks there's a better chance it would be McCarthy at two before it being May at two. So maybe there's some J.J. McCarthy build. What are the odds right now, Denton? I haven't looked at the odds here. This was Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, one of the guys that has been continuous in his mocking Drake May to Washington at number two. But that was until very recently. And yesterday he explained his new position with Pat McAfee.
Yeah, I always just say, you know, when you're doing these mock drafts, I try to do that with my ears and what I'm hearing. And then you rank the players as I see them and what I think there. As we, you know, certain teams you have more, there's more out there on. People around the league are talking and I'm buying it. With that one, I was like, everything in my gut was kind of saying, nah, this feels like Washington, Drake May, kind of bigger, more physical guy. It kind of fits them a little better. I had talked to people that, you know, had been discussing this with Dan Quinn and his buddies around the league. And they said, he kept talking about, I need to find my Matt Ryan. And I went to the Super Bowl with Matt Ryan. So that's why I was kind of hung up on, and I was sitting there going like, okay, well, that feels like Drake May it would be kind of more that type of player. So that's why I've been thinking this whole process that Drake May, you know, fits better with Washington. And then now as you're coming down the home stretch, it's like, okay, there's too much. Like it's some point in time, it's like, I can't inject my own personal opinion here. This is just overwhelming that everybody's that I talk to is saying that it's going to be Jaden. So that's why I have it there now.
There you go. That from Daniel Jeremiah, who has changed his tune and he likes now Daniels to Washington. I'm looking at some of the odds for the draft. Man, they have changed in the last 24 hours, Denton. Jaden Daniels has gone back to being a significant favorite to be the second pick in the draft. It was that way about a week ago, and then towards the end of last week, the odds tightened up between Daniels and May. I'm looking at BetMGM's sportsbook right now. Daniels minus 450. Drake May plus 350. J.J. McCarthy plus 1,100. That would be, I think, the biggest favorite Daniels has been, you know, leading up to the draft to be taken number two overall, right? I haven't seen him at minus 450. I think we've talked about him being minus 350. Like this time last week, you were away, but the odds really started to get tilted, and then they went back, and they were close at the end of the week after, you know, the agents, you know, liking of tweets, etc. But now Daniels, at least at BetMGM, and I'm checking one other shop right now, a prohibitive favorite to be the second pick in the draft. These things change very quickly. But still, at BetMGM, May is still the second betting favorite, but at plus 350. McCarthy is a distant third at plus 1,100. So
I'm seeing plus
1,200. Didn't Will Levis go up and down a lot last year?
Yeah, well, Will Levis, like a week before the draft, all of a sudden went from like plus 800 to be drafted at number two to like minus 300 because of a Reddit post.
Oh, that's right. You've told me about that.
That was unsubstantiated, obviously, because he did not go number two.
Look, I don't bet these prop bets for the draft. I just don't. I know, by the way, sports books actually hate even, you know, taking wagers on this because you have such significant wild swings with the money lines. But I'm just curious as to whether or not Daniels being the biggest favorite for you since this started means anything for you right now.
No, not really. I don't think. Obviously, we know how sportsbooks works with games, but I don't know how much true inside info they have with something like this. So I don't. This doesn't do much for me at all.
Yeah, and it could change again over the next 24 to 48 hours. Gives you a lot of opportunities, by the way, to middle up some bets. All right, Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus next.
Big night in the NBA last night. Three games. Cleveland takes a 2-0 lead over the Magic. They steal game two. Not really steal game two. They won pretty handily. The Denver Nuggets get a buzzer beater from Jamal Murray to beat the Los Angeles Lakers. They take a 2-0 lead. And the Knicks take a 2-0 lead following a blown 5-point lead from the Philadelphia 76ers with 47 seconds left to go. 104-101. The Knicks win that one. In the NHL, Caps in action tonight. Game two against New York Rangers. Puck drops at 7. You can hear that one on our sister station, 106.7 The Fan. You can hear right here tonight the Nats and the Dodgers. They square off at Nats Park. First pitch, 6:45. Pregame starts at 6:15 right here on the team, 980. Yesterday in the NFL, it was announced the Jets are sending former number 2 overall pick Zach Wilson out west to the Broncos. He can model those new uniforms they dropped yesterday with Denver. And that's what's trending.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Sam Monson is one of our favorites when he has time to join us, and he's doing that right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Sam's been with PFF pretty much from the jump as its lead analyst at PFF underscore Sam on X on Twitter. So we'll get to the quarterbacks because it's exhausting. It's like it's 4/5 of the show for about 3 months, quarterbacks. I actually want to ask you about the first round of this draft in general. You know how teams will say, we actually only had 20 players with actual first round grades. I don't even know if you guys have done this, but when you look at this draft, how many players actually have first round grades, would you guess?
Yeah, I think that's generally speaking how it works. And part of the reason why you get the way the drafts unfold is because every team has a different number of those players or a different sequence of those players. They might have 20 players with a first round grade, but there'll be a different 20 to another team. And so you end up with the first round getting populated that way. I think it's in that kind of ballpark. We're talking about 21, 22 players with that sort of first round grade. And then there are players that you start feeling a little bit uneasy about if you have to draft them in the first round.
Do you feel the same way others do, that because of the COVID year and because of NIL, that this is not a strong draft on the back half because, you know, roughly 75 players that would have been drafted aren't in the draft?
Yeah, I think a lot of players went back to college. And then there's a lot of players that are a year, you know, deeper into their college careers than you typically find. And generally speaking, the NFL doesn't like that. You know, that was seen as a negative thing. If a guy played deep into his college career, if he had 5 seasons in college, now you're getting these guys that have been in college for 6 years. So they're older prospects that haven't necessarily dominated at the college level. And these are all things that have been negatively associated in the draft process for years, but the landscape is changing and they might actually need to just embrace these players as what is available now. So I think it's definitely not a deep draft in most positions because the day 3 depth largely seemed to go back to college. I think it remains to be seen whether that's going to be the way the landscape is from now on or whether that was just a kind of 1 year aberration.
So what do you think of the first, let's just say, 3 rounds, the first 2 nights where Washington has 6 picks in the top 100? Is this a strong year or not?
I think it's strong in certain positions. It's an all-time good wide receiver class, and that seems to be something that we're saying almost every single year. But I think it remains true. You know, the caliber and volume of wide receivers coming out of college football right now is crazy and shows no sign of letting up. And this is a draft class that's sort of headlined by three absolute superstars at that position as well. So it's got the star power and the depth at the wide receiver position. And I think there's a couple of other positions that are deep as well. There are some others where the depth evaporates a lot more quickly, and it isn't that level of elite class.
While we're on this, because I want to go back to, and we'll get to the quarterbacks and what you think Washington should do here in a moment, but which are those areas that you think the depth of the position runs out fastest?
I mean, I think it's there are some positions where the depth runs out quickly, and then there are some positions where just the elite players or the guys that you're super confident in runs out quickly. So, you know, I think players like edge rusher, there's maybe three or four guys at the top of this draft that are real stars, and then you run out of guys that you're really confident in quite quickly. But I think at that point, once you get to the next wave, it is quite deep. There's quite a lot of edge rushers that I think are going to be drafted in those first couple of rounds, but there's a gap. There's this sort of tier drop off between that top tier guys and then the next group. And there's a couple of positions like that where there's a very sort of defined top tier of players and then a gap, and then the depth starts to kick in.
Who are the three or four edge rushing stars, do you believe?
I think Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, and Laiatu Latu are certainly the three guys. And then I think Chop Robinson probably deserves to be in that conversation as well. He's maybe not quite as clean a prospect as those other three, but definitely has some real elite high-level pass rushing ability and probably deserves to have separated himself from the next group.
I love, and I've watched a lot more of it here recently, I love Latu from UCLA. Is there any concern about his health?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so it's difficult to parse that from the outside. You know, he had a neck injury that had caused him to be medically retired previously. He transferred, obviously, to UCLA. Now, since that time, he played rugby and had two seasons, like fully healthy seasons of extensive work at UCLA. So at the minimum, the neck injury is not a short-term concern. It's something that he's played through, that he's played a lot through, and has not held him back once he got past the point of being medically retired. The concern is if that is something that is going to be a long-term, you know, degenerative reason that his NFL career gets shortened. I mean, we were talking about this on our show recently. There was an offensive tackle the Chargers drafted years ago called Marcus McNeil, who was dealing with a back injury that sounded kind of similar, where, you know, he'd had a back injury in college. I think they had diagnosed him with a sort of narrow spinal canal. And this was known at draft time that it was going to be something that shortened his career. He would not be, you know, a 10-year NFL starter. You might get him for 6, 7, 8 years. You don't know. And that was the gamble. And that became the sort of discussion is, well, how high do you draft the guy that we think is really good but is going to have a shorter career than other players? And that might be the conversation that Latu is dealing with. You know, he, I think, is by far the most polished of the pass rushers. He's been the most productive, and he's a better athlete than people thought he was when he got to the testing. But if you are dealing with a question of how high can you draft a guy if you think you'll only get one contract out of him before this neck injury starts to actually curtail his NFL career, or it might not, you know, be a factor at all. So, you know, I think that's the conversation that's happening with each medical staff and each team.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, you know, John Allen, when Washington drafted him in 2017, the reason he dropped was this, I think I'm going to remember this correctly, it was an arthritic concern in his neck and shoulder. And it turns out, you know, he's been fine and he's been healthy and he's been a really good player. And then the other guy, Montez Sweat, you remember when he came out, Washington traded back into the first round, Sam, to take him after they took Haskins at 15. And the reason he was there were cardiac and heart-related concerns. I'm trying to think of, like, some of the all-time injury concerns and how it played out in the pros. I was just thinking of those two off the top of my mind. Do any come to your mind?
Yeah, it's difficult. I forget. Somebody else was sent home from the combine with a heart issue. Was it Maurice Hurst? Somebody like that was sent home from the combine when they detected something, and it ended up not being a problem going forward. But I think the other thing is, even if you worked on the basis that he's a one contract player, if he's good enough, it's worth taking in the first round. You know, you're not necessarily getting him beyond one contract anyway. You're going to have to re-up him at whatever price it is. So, you know, it's not a guarantee that you can keep this guy around, even if he is a really good player and that the medical injuries or the medical issues aren't a factor going forward. So I think sometimes teams should probably look at this like, you know, if we only get one contract out of him, even if he is, or if he is as good as we think he is, it's worth taking that guy high in the first round.
That's interesting. But it makes sense, actually. We're talking to Sam Monson. So I promise we're going to get to Sam's quarterback stuff, but we just have obsessed on that so much. And having you on, I want to talk about some other things, especially from a PFF standpoint. When you guys sit around and get ready for a draft, who do you really respect? Like, which teams really do this the best from a PFF standpoint?
I think the league generally has gotten an awful lot better at drafting. I think they've gotten better at doing most things, actually. One of the benefits, I think, of sort of data and analytics and all these kinds of things is everyone focuses on, you know, the fourth down decisions and all the kind of stuff in game. But actually, it's just given them a much better idea of basic principles to stick to, and at least understanding what the framework should look like if and when you want to go outside of the boundary. So I think most teams now are kind of operating within the margins most of the time, and you don't tend to see these teams go completely off the reservation and just have those drafts that used to exist where, you know, guys were getting drafted. Like the Raiders had a couple of drafts like this when John Gruden and Mike Mayock were in charge. And it's like that draft just bears no resemblance to any other draft board, you know? And even if you're right, which they weren't most of the time, but even if you were getting the players correct, you're not playing the game well because you're missing out on so much sort of surplus value by drafting these guys rounds ahead of where anybody else had them listed. I don't think teams are really doing that anymore. There's really not too many instances of teams being just so completely out in their own thing. So I think a lot of teams are operating, you know, on a fairly sort of standard operating system and then deviating here or there when the conversations are not black and white. You know, whether it's Minnesota looking to trade up and get a quarterback, whether it's New England thinking about trading down, whether it's Arizona, the Chargers thinking about trading down. Like, these are not black and white yes or no answers. These are, it depends on your ranking of the quarterback, on your ranking of the other quarterbacks, on what the trade offer on the table is. And it's a balancing act of all these things, and it's going to come down 55-45 in one direction or the other. And so I think that's kind of where the NFL is these days.
I think that's interesting because, you know, what you're speaking to, and I think everybody followed it, is that drafts from the outside looking in were always evaluated on, did they actually pick the player where the player was supposed to go, or did they get value because they drafted that player that was ranked higher later? But it was, I think what you're almost saying, and you can say it another way or correct me if I'm wrong, but you're almost implying that it's become less subjective than it used to be.
Well, I think teams have just understood what the framework is to operate it. Like, nobody is making the Ricky Williams trade anymore, right? That was a trade that was objectively bad. It didn't need hindsight to happen. It was terrible process, and there's no possible scenario where that could have been a good move, even if Ricky Williams had ended up being, you know, the next Walter Payton, the next best running back of all time. It was a terrible trade. Nobody's doing that anymore because they understand that, and they understand sort of where the lines are in terms of what's way too far. And, you know, like I said, the decisions that are being made are these 55-45, 60-40 type of deals where it's close. Nobody is making these moves anymore where it's the kind of trade or the kind of deal, the kind of move that would get vetoed in a fantasy league. They're just not really happening in today's NFL because everybody has raised their baseline understanding of what the guardrails are and what the general boundaries are of what's too much.
All right, let's get to Washington. First of all, what is your impression of the new group here, of Adam Peters, Lance Newmark, Dan Quinn, etc.?
Yeah, I like what they've been doing, broadly speaking. I think they've hired a lot of smart people. I think they've done it in a coherent manner. You can sort of see the approach. You can see a constant thread throughout what they're doing. It's not randomized. It's not scattershot. And now everything comes down to the quarterback situation, comes down to which guy they end up picking.
All right, let's get there. Caleb Williams goes number one to Chicago. Washington's on the clock. You're the general manager. Who do you take?
Yeah, it's tough. There's each one of these guys, when you go through this draft, I think initially it seemed like it was Caleb Williams versus Drake May for the number one overall pick. And then the more everybody dove into it, the more it was Caleb Williams with the clear number one pick. And actually Drake May is in a group of other quarterbacks, and each one of these guys has got something to scare you about their game. With Drake May, it's, you know, he just misses way too many of these layups, these easy throws. And that line, you know, misses too many layups, is in almost every scouting report you're going to see, or any anonymous, you know, scouting analysis of Drake May. It's true. It's part of his game. And the question becomes, why is it there and can we fix it? Or also just how big of a problem is it? And that's another kind of debate. Jaden Daniels, you know, he's got a few little concerns or little negatives, I guess, on the profile. Number one, it took him a long time to get to where he is, and we're only really dealing with one high-level season of play. Number two, that season came when he's throwing to multiple first-round wide receivers. That's absolutely a factor. And number three, he, for his career, has had a really concerning and kind of problematic sack rate or pressure to sack rate, the amount of pressure plays that he takes that result in sacks. And generally speaking, that is a very quarterback-driven data point that translates well to the NFL, i.e. he's going to be that same guy in the NFL. And the list of quarterbacks that have a really bad pressure to sack rate is a very bad list of NFL quarterbacks and Joe Burrow. So it's not that you can't succeed with that kind of style of play. It just makes it very difficult. It gives you a very small target to stick that landing. And then J.J. McCarthy's issues are just a real lack of tape. You know, he didn't have the same responsibilities and requirements as these other guys. He was on a dominant national champion team that didn't need or want him to throw the football as much as these other guys. And so we just haven't seen a high enough sample size of him being put in those situations, which doesn't mean he can't do it, but means it's a projection. And we don't know what happens if you suddenly ramp up those requirements and ask him to carry the offense a lot more. It's a very different pressure on a guy, knowing that if he makes a mistake, that could be the game already, versus at Michigan, if he makes a mistake, he'll know the defense is probably going to hold. He can come back next drive and do it all over. Somebody like Caleb Williams knew that if he didn't hit 40 points, they weren't winning the game.
Jaden Daniels and Drake May too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a very
different... all three of them played with three of the worst. I mean, LSU's defense was truly the worst, you know, in the SEC and one of the worst in the country. But yes, I want to come back to the pressure to sack rate on Jaden Daniels in a moment. But real quickly on Drake May, you didn't answer the question. Who would you pick?
I would pick Drake May. I think it's easier to explain away his negatives. I think he's being more negatively impacted by his environment than any of the other quarterbacks we're talking about. And he was still playing at a level that was extremely high. I mean, his PFF grade is above 90. He had the most big time throws of any of these quarterbacks over the last couple of years. And I think you can definitely talk yourself into cleaning up a lot of his misses. Now, maybe he'll always, when he misses, the misses will always be ugly. You know, he has a tendency to sort of miss bad when he misses. But like, he still, how often does that happen and how big of a problem is it? I think that's the bottom line for him.
I mean, is it fair that I'm hearing from you that you don't think it's as big of a problem, and whether it's footwork or mechanics or whatever, it's fixable?
I think you will fix some of it, and the remaining portion that may be inherent, that may always be there, is probably not as big of an issue as people are going to talk it up to being. I think it looks worse than it actually is because the misses look so bad. You know, it's when a guy misses a receiver by a yard, it's we're on to the next down. We don't even really think about it. When a guy misses, you know, 5 yards wide and sends it into the stands, it looks ridiculous, and you remember that play. But it's the same play. It was the same consequence. Either way, he missed and we're on to the next down. And Drake May at least offsets that by an incredible volume of big plays and the capability to do special things.
All right, on Jaden Daniels, first of all, you said something. Do you really think that it was just one season of high-level production? I think from the midpoint of 2022, it's been high-level since.
I mean, I think it was predominantly he's been getting better throughout his college career, but I think it's predominantly one season of really elite play. That's certainly when the shifts happened in terms of, you know, a couple of data points. Now, there's some good games midway through that previous season, and his overall performance is pretty good. But I think we're talking fairly night and day the first 4 years of his career versus the last year.
Where do you have him ranked, actually? If you've got do you have Williams number one?
Yeah, I think Williams is the clear number one. I would take Drake May number two. I think I would probably take Jaden Daniel three.
Okay. So what I was going to say about pressure to sack rate is that his average yards per sack is very low. And I had a conversation with Eric Eager maybe 2 weeks ago about this very thing, that not all sacks are the same, right? I mean, J.J. McCarthy averaged near 8 yards on his sacks. Jaden Daniels was right around 4. So was Drake May. Drake May, by the way, right? Didn't he have a high pressure to sack rate for the most part?
Yeah. But and actually, there's very little difference between the two of them if you only look at 2023.
Right.
But we also know that that's a data point that is fairly noisy. It fluctuates year to year, bounces around. And so if you use a larger sample size for Daniels, that's when it jumps significantly higher than a guy like Drake May.
Yeah, my only point was not all sacks are the same, and his average yards per sack was, you know, right around 4, the lowest of any of the quarterbacks. Mays was low too, and the reason is they actually extend a lot and create a lot, and sometimes there weren't a lot of sacks where, especially in 22, where he drops back and just, you know, is overcome with pressure and dropped for a 10-yard loss. And that was my only context to it, is that not all sacks are the same.
No, I agree. But I think part of the running around and extending plays thing is part of the problem. I think sometimes, you know, the quarterback has a tendency to rely on his athleticism too much and essentially invite the problem. And whether or not it's a, obviously a sort of 7, 8 yard, 10, you know, 10 yard sack is significantly worse than a 1 or 2 yard sack, but the sack itself is the problem. Like the fact that these plays are turning into negative plays, it's like a running back being tackled behind the line of scrimmage. You know, if he's the architect of too many of those plays, you are putting yourself behind the chains with these negatives, and it takes a lot to dig yourself out of that hole. So it's kind of like the conversation around passing on or running the ball on first and second down. You know, and if you're running, if your sequence as an offensive play caller is run, run, pass, the quarterback is facing too many of these third and eight plays. And when you think you're protecting him, you're actually making his life more difficult because you are increasing the number of third and long, obvious passing situations when you could have reduced those by actually letting him throw the ball on first down, you know, which seems.
Yeah, no, I get all that. Yeah, I completely get that. And I think that, you know, and from you guys and people like you, we learned over the years, you know, first of all, sacks are as much a quarterback sack, if not more than offensive line sack. But with respect to drive killers, we understand what the number one drive killer is, and that is a big loss via the sack. But a second and 18 situation is different from second and 12. And they were the number one third down offense in the country, and it wasn't even close. And they were also faced the fewest third downs, which means after some of those plays, he was able, with great talent around him, as you pointed out, able to overcome it. I'm going along with you because I love my conversations with you, but I have to ask you about Penix Jr. What do you guys think of him?
I think he's got a lot of talent, and coaches love that guy. He's interesting because in all this data and analysis and tape, there's always an intangible aspect that we don't really have access to, that the coaches in particular do have access to. And that's why they have these, you know, 30 visits and all those kinds of things. And coaches love Michael Penix Jr. Whatever the intangible things are they're looking for, he's got them, because all the way through you'll hear various NFL coaches putting that guy, not just in that top mix, but like ranking him as the third quarterback in the draft or things like that. So I think he's got the arm to make it happen. He showed he's got way more athleticism than he ever really deployed in college. And maybe, you know, scrambling or maybe extending plays can be a bigger part of his game at the NFL level than it was in college. And I don't know that the injuries for him are necessarily a long-term problem. Like, he's been unfortunate with injuries. He's had a few significant injuries that have absolutely hampered his college career, but none of them are necessarily things that are going to be long-term problems or an indication that he's, you know, permanently injury prone. He's just been unfortunate. So if you can look beyond the injuries, I think there's a lot of reasons to think that he can operate an NFL offense at a pretty high level.
All right. You think Washington should take Drake May, assuming Caleb Williams goes one, pretty safe assumption. Who do you think they'll take?
I think they'll end up settling on Drake May. I'm not at all confident in it. You know, the conversation has been a lot about Jaden Daniels. The narrative on Drake May has been overwhelmingly negative throughout the entire process, for some reason. And I'm also not entirely sold on the idea that there isn't smoke where there's fire when it comes to the NFL liking J.J. McCarthy more than the public or more right. than the media or more than draft analysts. Like, from day one, there's been that discussion that, be prepared, the NFL likes that guy more than anybody else does. And, you know, he's going to go higher than you think he will. I wouldn't rule out the possibility that J.J. McCarthy goes at number two.
Yeah, interesting. One last one, actually, sorry. Does his frame concern you, or maybe his style, reckless at times, concern you, Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is, he needs to change the way he plays in that regard. Like, there's a Mike Vick element to his game where for his entire career, people were pleading with him to, look, you make special things happen, but come on, we need slide at the end of this play. Like, we need you on the next down. Jaden Daniels takes some of the most ridiculous hits for a guy his size and his ability. Like, he plays the game with this Josh Allen recklessness, only, you know, minus 35 pounds. That can't work at the next level. Like, you need to be more cognizant of protecting yourself.
Yeah, some of that was basically if they had to punt, the other team was scoring 7. You're great. I always love having you on. Enjoy the next couple of days. We'll talk soon.
Anytime. Take it easy.
Sam Monson, everybody, from Pro Football Focus. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.